grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Before we start, two observations. Notice these front seats are empty. Half the priest of the way is preaching again and again about how bad it is that person back to the church. The next time you hear a priest comment on this, I want to tell you this. I made a retreat in Pecos, a place Bill had mentioned. I think he mentioned it anyway. All priests. And it was church was like this. Then in the first talk, guess which row of seats was absolutely empty. So they don't do it themselves. We don't do it ourselves. An announcement, I made it before, I'll repeat it. I have altered the schedule. Tomorrow morning, we will have the talk at the regular times, the first talk, and then the second, the mass is, the religious service will involve the talk on the 12th step. We'll end immediately at noon, go over for lunch, and that will be the end of the conference. If you can, please, don't pack before you come back from lunch. Because when you pack mentally, you're going to tune yourself out from the rest of the session. I think after lunch, you should have enough time so that you can get it all together and get it to your car and be gone comfortably. There's a variety of reasons for this. Some selfish. I've got to go to Edmond and then be back in the city for mass tomorrow. And we've had a rather full schedule and kind of covered as much I really feel as can. I don't know if you want to see God's power, but if you ever thought about it, can you imagine a bunch of alcoholics driving through the kind of weather? Did you find anybody? Did you find anyone at all? They were all in church then. Okay. If we don't get someone over in about 10 to 15 some save time on coffee. We'll have to send for help. Can you imagine a bunch of drunks braving the weather we did to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to spend time in a monastery? I mean, it just ain't real. There's something else happening in our lives, and it's neat. In our program, the 8th step says that we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Scripturally, in the Gospel of Matthew, there's the simple statement that if you bring your gift to the altar and there recall that your brother is anything against you, leave your gift at the altar. Go first to be reconciled with your brother and then come and offer your gift. That's familiar stuff to many of us. We've heard it. It was very heavy when it was first said. Because in the thought of the time, the most sacred duty had was to honor God, and they were told making peace with their brothers and sisters is more important than honoring God. That's something nice to say. I don't feel that you'll hear anything new when we talk about the 9th step. I say that because I know that in some ways you've been hearing new points in some of the steps. And you will on the 8th. It's one of the twin steps. It's usually dealt with as the intro to the 9th. And that hurts. It strips away again the uniqueness of the step. I was listening to Bill Wilson talk on it the night that he wrote the step. He took 6 and May 12th. So alcoholics couldn't score halfway through them. He was having a psychosomatic ulcer attack, too. For those people who get upset and have problems when they're in the program. I didn't hear that until I was listening to him. That was fascinating. See how hung up he was. Unfortunately, lately, we are trying to take 12 and make 6 again by uniting and combining. It really hurts me to hear this. We go to a meeting and all the talk on the 8th is simply to get the list for the 9th. And everybody who comments on the 8th talks about the amends they have made. The 8th step has nothing to do with making the actual making of amends at all. Has its own personality. If I had my say, I would take a minimal 13 weeks to study the steps, because I would spend 2 weeks on the 8th step alone. I would divide it in two. What I'm going to share with you, I believe, probably will be new to many of you. Only one person has ever pointed this out to me, and it saved my ass. I'll tell you that one. Hit step 8. I believe, as this person did, that the steps are written by God. Therefore, as he pointed out to me, it is very significant that the 8th step does not say, we became willing to make amends to all persons we had harmed, and so we made a list. It says, we made a list. And became willing. Which means at the time you make your list, you need not be willing to make an amend to any person on the face of this earth. You do not have to want to, you do not have to intend to. And as I shared with you, I was very thankful to hear this, because I had not yet made my list. I'd like to put a little footnote in and say, Bill Wilson authored both our big book and the 12 and 12, but there are contradictions between them. And I believe we play mental games if we don't recognize this. One of the contradictions deals with the 8th step. In the big book, very clearly it says that the 8th step list is written in the 4th step. We have the list when we have done the 4th. If you read along in the 12 and 12, and you block out or you've never read the big book, I am sure you will get the impression that when you reach the 8th step, there are strong suggestions to get out paper again and now make a list. That's the only way I can read it honestly. I like this because if you have your list from the 4th step, it'll be good. If you make a new list now, I feel it will be better. When I was told this, I was part of a group that felt I needed a new list because I didn't get one out of my 4th step that was adequate. But I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to make amends to all those people. And I was told just what I needed to hear. When I made my list, I didn't intend to make amends to these people. I hated many of them. I was happy to write out some of the lousy things I wrote about them again. I put their name, what I did, and why I did it. And I mean, I got a lot of bitterness out. I expressed it. I wished I had been there so I could punch them in the face again. I didn't physically hit them. I'm not a physical person. So I could tell them what I thought of them. And I was doing the step. The step says to make the list. And I found something out. In the first half of the 8th step, if we simply make a list, we will have a tremendous discovery. And once this had been pointed out to me to do it this way, and I did it, I got exactly this. Then I went back to the literature, and the 12 and 12 says this. I learned that other people have feelings. And that was crucial. I've been walking through life using people, treating you as things, expecting you to be neutral. I had been hurting people, and they had not liked it, and they had reacted, and I had not liked their reaction. And I began to become aware that if I do not want you to react bitterly to me, I've got to stop acting bitterly toward you. I have to remember that you have feelings, that you thought, that you can be hurt, that you can be turned off. And that's a very deep and real discovery, and one that in many ways can be very crucial for the success of our entire program in AA. I feel, therefore, just to do your list and to forget the amends, to feel maybe you'll be lucky and die peacefully long before you ever have to contact the first person to tell them you're sorry. But you'll already have profited just from writing out the list. I feel that there's a real good and excellent reason just to do this. You know, a lot of us want peace. We may never have thought of this. You can't get peace. Peace is not a thing. Peace is a byproduct. It's like happiness. Try to make yourself happy. Happiness is a byproduct of doing things you enjoy or being something you enjoy. Peace is the result of proper relations. The Hebrews have a wonderful word, the word shalom. And that's what it means. May all your relations be correct. That's what our word really means, but we've looked at it other ways. You can't be peaceful. It results automatically if you are relating correctly with yourself, no deep inner tension. If you're relating correctly with God, no struggle. And if you're relating correctly with others, the result of correct relationship is peace. You got it. You can't get it otherwise. If I hate myself, I can't have peace. If I tremendously feel God hates me, I can't have peace. And if you and I are still at war, I can't have peace. Therefore, the eighth step starts opening the door toward my walking into the world and living and experiencing the reality of peace. And the ninth step promises is we will comprehend the word serenity. Same thing. Why do we get it? Because we're experiencing it. We're going to know it. Why? Because it starts to happen by the time we start working the ninth step to any degree. Steps 1, 2, and 3 tell me that I'm at peace with God. I'm sober today. I believe that's a miracle. That tells me that God loves me. 4, 5, 6, and 7 enable me to accept myself. 4, I face myself. 5, I share myself. 6, 7, the way I've shared them with you, I struggle to become entirely ready to love myself. And so, 2 of the 7 relationships are now correct. I'm at this point ready to go out into the world. There's the beginning of love in my heart for me. There can therefore be love offered you. But if I'm going to do that, I've got to become aware of you. And so I've got to become aware that you have feelings. I can't walk over you. I can't jab you. I can't use you. I can't be hot and cold and expect you to like me. And that's what I found. It was humiliating, it was shocking, and it was terrifying. But it was also gratifying. There are side benefits to learning that you have feelings. One of them is I'm not responsible, therefore, for all of your feelings. We had a guy in Enid, the one that I mentioned, died this week. We had all the long-term sobriety. We had a reality of this discovery. Somebody did something dumb driving. We start out cursing them and then realize, well, maybe he has a reason for being a lousy driver this week. The toast was burnt, or he didn't get any last night, or something other. And they always use those two examples. And they're both real. picking bolt of a person being a power move. I've got to remember that. I deal with women a lot. I've got to remember that they can be going through a period. Therefore, I'm not responsible for every depression they have. I walk up to you. You're snappy. It may not be from anything I've done. If I'm not, you know, if I become aware that you have feelings, a byproduct is that I don't cause them all. I cause the ones I'm responsible for, and that's all I've got to take the blame for. And if you want to feel lousy on your own, I will give you the privilege to be lousy on your own. If I have caused your lousiness, I believe somewhere down the line the program tells me what to do, and I hope I can take responsibility for the pain that I've helped induce in your life. But there was, and that's a very real byproduct. This becomes very important, very. If I've got to be aware of where you're at, that means I've got to learn to speak your language, to speak to you. I can't, as I shared before, in a different way. I can't speak to you in French if all you understand is English. I can't talk to you where I'm at if you're somewhere very different. I might ruin you. I nearly did. I had a deep spiritual experience one day, and I had a friend, a drug addict, come over, and I shared it with her. I had 3 years sober, and my first 3 years were almost a constant cloud nine. All my real pain came in my next 3 years. It was my Enid period. But being in Enid wasn't responsible for it. It was just there were problems in the world that really hurt me. She had 1 year sober, and every breath was a struggle. She was building a delicate peace with God, but she could not touch the experience I had, and it made her feel, therefore, that she was a failure. And I just watched that whole house, the peace that she was constructing, crumble, and she fell apart. It took 3 hours of AA, of just being there, and of reassuring her, to bring her back to be nearly where she was before I opened my big mouth. That was after I had done my 8 steps and realized people had feelings. So I certainly have to remember this again and again. It isn't just I've got to be aware that you have feelings if I hurt you. If I'm going to sponsor you, if I'm going to work with you, if I'm going to share things with you, I've got to know where you're at and speak your language. And it was this 8-step list in such a real way that started making me aware of how unaware that I was, and therefore helped me see the stride that I had to make. I consider this crucial in AA. Right today, I can't tell you the number of times I've seen people hurt and been hurt myself because others are not aware that we are sensitive. I go through small cycles and am very sensitive about my weight. And when I'm on a cycle of putting it on, some dumb smart issue would make a comment, hey, you're getting a little fat here, aren't you? Let me solemnly assure you, by the time anyone has put on enough weight for you to notice, they already have. They do not need your keen insight to point it out to them. I sat at a meeting one day. I was chairing the meeting, and we had two people named Joe. And somebody said, made a comment. He said, Joe said this. Well, you know, Fat Joe. And I stopped the meeting, and I didn't like that, and I pointed it out. You know, when I leave a meeting, I go into a world that I don't know how it's going to treat me. Sometimes it builds me up. Most of the time it ignores me, but very often it hurts me. There is one place I go to be built up, and that's AA, fellowship. And I come, therefore, with my heart open and my defenses down. And the cuts, that I received in AA stayed. They really hurt. And I believe the same for others. And let me tell you, if anyone has been heavy all their life, don't think that a lifetime of being cut makes the pain any less. A lifetime of being cut makes the wound more sensitive. And that will go in any area, size, hair, whatever it is. People come into our fellowship for love. Therefore, the pain that we unconsciously and stupidly and inconsiderately offer is all the worth. We've got to be super aware in our fellowship of where people are at. We've got to be super aware in our fellowship of the reality of their feelings. And like, I don't like being hurt. I try therefore not to hurt. I like humor. I like joking with people. I've made it a policy to try to joke on people's strong points. If you're exceptionally intelligent, I'd like you to comment on how dumb you are. You know, if you're if you have a bundle of friends, I'm likely to joke about how lonely you are. That's safe, usually. Even then, you got to be careful because sometimes people aren't always that secure there. But I try never, ever to joke about people in their sore point, in their weak point, because of the hurts that I myself have experienced. And I can simply say that the easiest, simple way for any of this, for me to become aware of this, came from my own working the eighth step. I remember 12-stepping a drunk, and I gave him all these high things that he ought to do, the deep spiritual steps. Ringing in my ear, he had said about 5 times before I was aware of what he was saying. He kept telling me how many years it was since he could go 3 full days sober. And finally, he said it often enough that I realized how dumb I was being. And I told him to forget all the big things I was telling him to do and go out and buy a bag of candy. If a man can't make 3 days sober, what's happening? He's going into sugar shock. And his body is screaming so badly for sugar that he's craving to the point of madness a drink. And then I told him after he started chewing the candy to go to AA. He made it 5 days. He felt good and didn't go to AA and got drunk. But I finally heard where he was at. Sometimes we come on with high principles when people need a simple answer. Tell them to work like I will the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, or 8th step. And what they need is to take a hot bath and cry it out. Get some sleep. I got to hear where you're at. Are you tired? Are you physically exhausted? Are you hurting over some deep wound in your past? You know, there's different answers for different problems. And I can't just deal with patterns. Oh, you're an Al-Anon. Therefore, you're a martyr. Mother, you want to be walked over. You want a mother. Therefore, here's what you do. There's no such thing as an Al-Anon. There's no such thing as an alcoholic. There's just people. But the disease of alcoholism, and I've got to remember that. And it's not an easy thing for me to do at all, to try to remember that. The step says we become willing to make amends, make a list, I'm sorry, of all persons. It amazes me at how short many people's lists are, unless they're so new in the program they're still rum-dum. The 12 and 12 points out how we ought to have a long list, and it's got to be long. I've heard a lot of reasons for why there are short lists. I did all my drinking at home. Unless you've done all your living at home, there still are a lot of people you've hurt in your life. The step doesn't say made a list of all persons we had harmed when drunk. It says made a list of all persons we had harmed. I can excuse easily most of the harms I committed when drunk. I can blame it on the alcohol. I'll make the amends. I'll accept the responsibility. And boy, it's a hell of a lot harder to remember the time I made my mother cry out of pure selfishness after my father died, because I wanted a used car that we couldn't afford, because she was getting $20 a week compensation to support all of us. And I just wanted that car, and I tore her to shreds. There's no drinking involved in that. That's a lot of hurt. I have other memories of things like that I did. I remember sober 4 years. It was a funny story. I was 2 years sober and went to Dallas a year and a half and talked to this husband and wife in the program, and he said how he was, whatever it was, he had over 5 years and got so mad at her one day, he threw a salt shaker at his table. I figured, my God, he's going to get drunk tomorrow. Anybody in the program that long, that sick, how could he ever do that? I was in the program quite a while. It was less than five at this time, but right around three. I had a saint, a black woman who just is one of the true saints I've met in my life, or a housekeeper. I had given her a list of six things that were to be on the table for supper. Seven came down, and there were six there, and I said, where's the corn? She says, we're out of it. I didn't even sit at the table. I went right out of the house. Walked in the rain, cooled off, came back and made amends to her. I can do dumb things sober. I do dumb things sober. I have a long list. All persons we hit hard. Not just in our family. All persons at work, school, home, church, neighborhood, playgrounds, and while drinking, wherever it has happened. Those people who have a short list remind me of a woman in a story that Father Hillary in our program, or Abbot Hillary, tells. His community, incidentally, is this group. He's not here, but he belongs to this branch of Benedictus. Usually when he's in the area, he'll stay with them. Tells the story about this society lady who goes to see the doctor. She's so embarrassed. And she says, doctor, I've got a problem. It isn't serious, but it's so embarrassing. I pass gas very frequently, but thank goodness it has no odor and it makes no smell. But I still feel terrible in doing it. Can you help me? And he says, I sure can. Take these pills and come back in a week. A week later, she's back. She's looking bad. And he says, how are you? And he says, doctor. And she says, it's far worse. I'm still passing gas as frequently. Now it still doesn't make any noise, but it has a terrible smell. He says, well, now that we got your sinuses cleared, it's time to start working on your hearing. That is an eight-step joke, I believe. People with short lists need their sinuses and their hearings cleared. They've been walking through life raising a stink and making a loud bang and thinking nobody has smelled it, nobody's noticed it, so they haven't harmed anybody. And that's really what it is. More delicate, the longer I grow in the program, the more I realize how bad things are. It doesn't make any difference what someone did to me. I'm not making a list of all persons I harmed first. I'm not making a list of all persons I harmed more. I'm making a list of all persons I harmed. If you stabbed me and I got back at you in a lesser way, if I harmed you, you belong on my list. I'm not working my program for you to have peace. I'm working my program for me to have peace. And I've got to just put that down on the list. It'll tell me something. Harmed, the 12 and 12 tells us, I would just say it's any kind of unjust hurt. Unjust in one way that I'll explain in a moment. Psychological. Our children, people we humiliate, people we felt free to call Fat Joe all their lives and never cared about, people we laughed at in school, people we used nicknames on, people we used racial jokes on, people we've harmed physically, if we've been the kind to resort to that, I haven't, people we've harmed financially. It's any kind of unjust harm. Unjust harm, I mean harm not brought about by tough love. In giving tough love, you will always hurt people. As a matter of fact, I believe many people fail by omission when they don't give tough love and they hurt. Parents who don't discipline their children hurt them and older them in for not discipline. If you're not willing to take your child's hatred, you may just solemnly owe your child deep and real amends. If you're not willing to tell someone you sponsor something in tough love, you may kill them and you may never get a chance to make amends to them. You can hurt seriously by what you have not done. I say this because most alcoholics, when they sober up, hurt their children by omission. They tend to want to make up for years of ignoring the children, years of being cruel to the children, years of shaming the children, years of beating the children. They go to the opposite extreme and they let the children run the house. That's never healthy. It is never good. And the children get scarred by just being put in a circumstance that emotionally they're just not ready for yet. So there are amends owed on this. May I say as an aside, because I don't want to forget this, if anyone ever comes to you for amends, say nothing until they're finished. Don't stop them. Don't try before they're done. Get yours in too. I'm saying this to people who, as a priest, when I hurt people in the church and go to make amends, they usually want to be nice to me and they try to keep me from saying, oh, Father, you don't have to say that. I do have to say this, and it's very important. And I've learned from people trying to keep me from expressing it how important it is for me to allow other people their whole say. Just sit there, bite your tongue. It is very, if more difficult for me to receive amends than to make amends. I want to stop the person. I want to share. I want to thank them. I've got a first listen. That from my own step list, that's where they're at. To block them would be to harm them at this point. So, first half of the step has nothing to do with the men. It deals only with hurt. A byproduct, and it's hurt put on paper. The goal for me, every step because it's a benefit. The goal for me in the eighth step is I become aware of you. And that's a real benefit. As long as I'm treating you as a thing, I'm really going to miss the beauty of you as a person. When I become aware of you having feelings, I can become aware of you as someone in my world. And that can open up my world in new and deep ways. Became willing to make amends to them all, except wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I'll comment on the well, them or others when I deal with the ninth step. Someone that I was sponsoring told me what for me is how to become willing to make amends to them all. What that means, the willingness. We were at a meeting together and he simply said that for him, that meant healing the relationship inside him. Bells started going off. Wow. And they still go off. It's so neat. That's what it means. If I've hurt you, somehow I've broken in my own mind our relationship. What do I do? If I'm going to be willing to amend, that's not apologize, it's mend again. I'm going to reestablish in me a love relationship with you. I can't do that. That's beyond my power. So we pray for the willing. There's many ways to do this, but like inside me, before I made amends to my mother, I wanted to become an adult son in my mind in a correct relationship of love with an adult mother, even though we were both still sick and screwed up at the time. But to heal the relationship, I did it that way. I had amends to make to my bishop. Same thing. An adult person to an adult person. And I just keep praying till that exists. And it's neat when it exists. There are many statements made on what to do with someone we hate. Usually you get advice from the back of the big book. Pray for them for 2 weeks. Rarely do you get the advice that's in the big book. In the 11 chapters. The way to deal with resentment, the big book says, is with the fourth step. The advice from that life at the end of the big book should be an addition to, not a substitute for the program. I don't know that that advice works. I do know the big book works. Write out what they've done, the big book says. Write it on paper, what they did to me first. Then look at it. And then the big book gives another one of its prayers. I am aware of 3. Someone told me there's 4. I only use 3. Third step prayer, 7-step prayer, and the prayer to end resentment. You look at what the person has done. My bishop hurt me by treating me as a child and lying. That hurt. The prayer then is, this is a sick man. How can I be of help to him? God, keep me from being angry. Thy will be done. I have misphrased 1 or 2 words in the prayer because I learned it wrong the first time when I had 200 some names to say it with, 1 at a time. And so it's burned in my mind forever with 1 or 2 words reversed. Tremendous prayer. You look at the person, this is a sick man, you understand, he's got weaknesses too. How can I be of help to him? That takes the accent off my hurt to his need and goes from negative to positive. God, keep me from being angry. It puts it in the right spirit, thy will be done. Now, thy will be done. If I still hate him at the end of that, time to keep praying. All I do is I picture the person in my mind. And I keep praying. That's all. whatever happens, happens. Normally, I start praying for the person and I hate them. And strong feelings of hate come up. That's okay. I cannot control my feelings. Feelings aren't wrong. I'm acting healthy. I'm acting in prayer. If I try to suppress that hatred, I'll never work through to love them. If I just keep picturing the person and praying, that hate stays, that hate gets expressed, that hate is out. Now I'm ready for love. After I've hated long enough, if I just stay at it, for me it takes 2 or 3 weeks sometimes, picture the person and pray, stay at it. All of a sudden, inside me, I feel a little bit of what God feels for that person, and the relationship's healed. If you do this, if you heal the relationship inside you, when you get to the next step, it goes like that. The work's over. I'm one with you already. In the next step, all I do is I look for an opportunity to express that unity with you. It's just bringing out into the world the unity that I've already, through God, achieved in my own heart. That system works very, very well for me. The ninth step, the reading that I'd like to share with you, is the Zacchaeus story. Zacchaeus, remember, is a crook. Well, he's a tax collector, so he's part of the mafia. I used the mafia earlier. Someone in my family, not my immediate family, one of my close relatives is married into the mafia. I'm from a mafia town. We're 100 miles straight west of New York City, up in the mountains. Before air conditioning, many of the mafia Italians, including one of the heads of Murder Incorporated about 40 years ago, went to summer vacation in our town. And they're very real people. They feel much the way we do. We've done much the same things, many of us, that they've done. Entering Jericho, he passed through the city. This is in Luke. There was a man there named Zacchaeus, the chief tax collector and a wealthy man. He's the chief, so he's the head honcho. He's the Don, the Godfather. He was trying to see what Jesus was like, but being small of stature, wasn't able to do so because of the crowd. He first ran on in front, then climbed a sycamore tree which was along Jesus' route in order to see him. When Jesus came to the spot, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, hurry down. I mean to stay at your house today." He quickly descended and welcomed him with delight. When this was observed, everyone began to murmur, "He's gone to a sinner's house as a guest. Zacchaeus stood his ground and said to the Lord, "I give half my belonging, Lord, to the poor. If I've defrauded anyone in the least, I pay him back fourfold." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, for this is what it means to be a son of Abraham. The Son of Man has come to search out and save what is lost." Notice the order. Zacchaeus got love, and so he made amends. Zacchaeus did not make amends. So much neater that way. Why should we amend our relationship with the world? Because what we got is so good, we don't want to lose it anymore. And it makes for real deep unity in this way. Zacchaeus didn't act good so that Jesus would come to him. Zacchaeus acted good because Jesus had come to him. And he didn't want to. I didn't say he didn't want to lose it. That isn't it. He was celebrating what was happening. And hopefully for most of us, by this time, have something to celebrate. We make direct amends. That's the 12 and 12 clearly says things that are the opposite of what we hear at many meetings. Living sober is not making direct amends. I have heard countless people say that it was. They're living sober to their family, and so they're amending the situation. Living sober is acting normal. I hope your mother lived normal and did not get drunk. In doing that, she was not making amends to you. She was giving you what she should as a decent person. Amends is above and beyond living sober. It is a positive effort to correct a problem.
This is Ed Ekstrom. This completes